From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Well, our connection this hour will be made on the streets and sidewalks of Monroe County. Streets and sidewalks that they hope are going to be more walkable, rollable, bikeable. The county and the community are currently working on a proposed active transportation plan. Active transportation refers to travel powered by human energy. So, in addition to walking and biking, think wheelchairs or strollers or scooters and more. The plan is expected to be completed this spring, and it's not being developed behind closed doors. So, what do you want to see when it comes to policies and infrastructure for how you move from place to place in Monroe County? You ever been driving somewhere and you wondered, why is it built like this? Or have you ever been trying to bicycle anywhere and wondering, where is the infrastructure for this? Why are certain parts of our community, they feel much more fraught for bicycling? And is that changing? Have you seen that change? Well, how do we get to that point where we want to go? You can share your comments and ideas during an upcoming public workshop. But first, we discuss those ideas today with guests who have been, well, working on these issues for a long time in our community. They are advocates for equitable solutions. And I'd like to welcome our first guest is a legislator. Susan Hughes Smith is Monroe County legislator in District Number 14. Sue, welcome back to the program.
Thanks for having me, Evan.
And Dr. Scott McCray is with us. Scott is an advisor for Reconnect Rochester, a longtime cycling advocate. How many miles a week do you ride, you think, Doctor?
Oh, probably 60 miles a week.
60 miles a week?
Yep.
But, you know, it's going to be snowing a lot.
So. Well, I didn't ride today. I'm a fair weather, actually, but I've been riding a lot in March and February, which is crazy, but that's the way things are going.
Well, thank you for being here. We appreciate
Absolutely.
You being here. And in a moment, we'll talk to your colleague as well from Reconnect Rochester. We'll have board member Renee Stetzer on the line with us. But let me start with Sue, because, you know, we've been in touch in recent weeks. And the first question I think we want to make sure listeners understand or get answered is, what are the problems you're trying to solve and who decides what problems to solve, if that makes sense?
Sure. Okay. That's a great question. Let me start this way. I really appreciate the leadership of County Executive Bello in his efforts to put in place some plans that will guide the path for Monroe County and its citizens in the coming years. So the comprehensive plan, the active transportation plan, the climate action plan, these are all going to be visionary documents that prioritize where investments need to go. And because tax dollars, of course, are always limited, we need to make strategic decisions where we're getting the most bang for our buck. But I want to acknowledge that systems are terribly difficult to change. They tend to, you know, reinforce themselves. There's people and staff that can be resistant to change and contradictory policies that can be in place that have to be addressed if we're going to be successful. So what are we trying to accomplish with an active transportation plan? From my perspective, and for constituents who regularly reach out to me, it's to provide cost-effective, safe alternatives to motorized transit. I have community members who, for whatever reason, whether they be health limited, that they are unable to drive, or whether it's by choice, they don't wish to drive, they get around by walking and biking, and they would like to be able to do that in a safe way. And for our communities to be better integrated so that we can move more easily from place to place as a cost-effective way to get to work and recreation and so forth, enjoy life.
Are there? I'm sure Scott will probably have even more pointed things to say, but I will ask you, is there like a place in this community, an intersection, a roadway, somewhere where you go, I cannot believe that this is still this way and we've got to get this done?
Oh, for me, absolutely. I mean, I live in Brighton, and there's so many folks in Brighton who are going back and forth from, you know, our town to the University of Rochester. And Elmwood Avenue is a huge, huge disaster. You know, students tell me that they don't even feel safe walking on the sidewalks because the speed of the traffic is flowing through there, and there's no buffer of any kind. Not a shoulder or anything. And so they would really are looking forward to seeing the traffic slowed there, the bike lanes be implemented in that section in particular.
Okay, so you started to touch on it. So when you talk about people not feeling safe, and there's different possible remedies. So number one, you want to bring the speed limit down? Yes?
Well, yeah, in some locations, absolutely.
Okay.
There are road diets where it's not so much the speed limit changes, but by redesigning our roadways, traffic calms. So drivers tend to obey the speed limit better. And you have buffers between cars and bikers or cars and pedestrians that make those folks feel safer because they're not in such close proximity to the vehicles.
What's interesting to me is that there's sidewalk in most of that area, isn't there?
In much of it.
Okay. But even where there's sidewalk, you're saying, people are saying, that's not enough.
Right. The high schoolers that I know that walk from their homes along Elmwood to get to the high school, many of them don't feel safe.
Okay. Yep. And when it comes to the process of addressing this, mm-hmm. you are both a parent, a resident, a county legislator. Mm-hmm. What have you seen over the years, and what does that process currently look like? Is it effective? Are people hearing what needs to change?
Oh, I think people are hearing what needs to change, and I don't think we have hit a level of being effective. I think it's a challenge because sidewalks, for example, are the responsibility of towns and villages, whereas, you know, Brighton is crisscrossed by a number of county roads and a state road. And so when those are the thoroughfares through your town, other levels of government need to be good partners. They have to be willing to listen to those towns and villages who want to see a change.
Okay. So that's a good little opening set of comments from Sue. I bet you Scott's got a few places that you can think of that drive you nuts a little bit.
Mount Hope and Elmwood are like a disaster. Then whenever the media wants to know a place to go to film.
That's where you sent them?
Yeah, that's a good place. There's a lot of things going on there. There's a lot of people moving in and out of that intersection.
But what do you see when you are in that space? What do you see that looks wrong to you?
Well, first of all, it's a four lane going both ways, and so cars are moving side by side. Then you know the lane as you move into that intersection, it becomes massive because you get another lane for a turn lane, and there's a right turn. So, you know, to get pedestrians or bicyclists across that intersection is a real challenge. And there are a lot of people that are coming from out of the county area that are going to the medical center, and they don't know the area very well. Like, it's confusing for them. So I've seen a number of crashes happen at that intersection just, you know, going to the hospital over the years.
Let's just spend this whole hour talking about the worst places. Then
we're going to go on to Lake Avenue for sure.
Yeah, well, are you kidding? Lake Avenue. I go up and I live in Shalott. I'm up and down Lake Avenue every day. I'm always amazed. I get home in one piece.
It's a drag strip, basically.
It's amazing. Right. What else stands out in our communities?
Well, the one thing I think, you know, we're talking about this, the Monroe County Master Plan, and the city's also doing a master plan at the same time, which is great, and having Mayor Evans really participating and putting his weight behind changing our streets and improving them for pedestrian bikes and transit is really, really great. Let's say that I'm riding. When I ride to work, I ride down to the Double Diamond by the Jewish Community Home on Winton once in a while. Usually I take smaller roads, but if I'm in a hurry, it's 20 minutes for me to ride from my place over around the Park Avenue neighborhood, and I'll just take Winton. And actually, there's actually a nice bike lane that goes from the East Avenue, basically. There's a bike lane eventually that goes past the Unitarian Church down to Highland. And I'm like, wow, this is great. There's a bike lane here. But then as soon as you get to Highland, the bike lane stops. And they just redid that road, and now there's a wonderful 6-foot easement there, but there's no bike lane there. It disappeared. And it's basically because the county, on county roads, do not, outside the city, they do not put bike lanes down. And if you're going to have a bike-friendly community, you've got to build bike lanes, protected bike lanes. You have to do bike infrastructure Talking about complete streets is one thing, but actually implementing it is a whole different matter. And you need to put some paint down, put some protected bike lanes down, and protect people.
Yeah, and to Scott's point about that, first of all, no one from the county administration was able to join us for this particular conversation. But when we talk about how governments handle this, and I hope listeners know we're talking about individual intersections, but really these are issues that go town to town, county to county, right. And I think everyone can relate to having certain intersections that don't feel safe, having places where you don't feel like you can walk. Most of Henrietta. I'm so awful to Henrietta. I can't believe anybody from Henrietta listens to this program. I love you, Henrietta. I'm mostly kidding, a little bit. I'm thinking about what the DOT might say here, Scott, because if I'm running a county Department of Transportation, I might say, look, there's a lot of change that has to be made, but you can't snap your fingers and get the paint that you want or the infrastructure you want. This is going to take time. You have to coordinate it. We're going across different boundaries here. And maybe you're being a little hard on them, or maybe you don't think you are being too hard on them.
I don't really think so, because I've been doing this for a decade now, and Richard DeSera, who is the father of Rochester biking, and God bless his soul, he's passed, but he participated in eight bike ped master plans in the region at these municipalities like Henrietta, Irondequoit, Brighton, all these different places, and a lot of those recommendations were for bike lanes and better pedestrian structures, and all those master plans, they all cost about $40,000 to $60,000 to do. They all sit on a shelf because we're not doing bike lanes outside of the city. The city finally convinced the county and the state that they could put some bike lanes down, but outside that area, once you get to the edge of the city, those bike lanes disappear.
Why do you think that? Why haven't they changed?
Because the county DOT does not put bike lanes outside the city, the city of Rochester.
So if you look at the county DOT has a internal complete streets policy. It's a public document, and right. it says right there that they prefer.
They substitute.
Yeah. Instead of bike lanes, I said that they prefer paved shoulders, which is just not what a complete street is. So, Legislator Hasman, Legislator Barnhart, other of my colleagues have been, advocating for this issue for a long time. And we have to fix that. Like, there are dozen or so counties across the state that have formally adopted complete streets policy. We would like to see that happen in Monroe County. We would like to rectify that problem and get that internal policy changed so that they have bike lanes as their policy, and we'd like to see them implemented.
What would be standing in the way of this?
The state and the county, this is not just, Monroe County. This is around the state. And the state and county engineers, they've been taught a certain thing. And what their emphasis is on speed, to make cars go fast with they think are safe speeds if they can, and congestion. And they design these streets so that the cars can get through in a timely fashion, which I understand, and they want to minimize congestion. Those are their number one priorities. The number one priorities for the public is actually safety and have healthy streets, basically. So there, and over the years, the engineers in their universities and when they were trained to do this kind of structural analysis, thinking like cars are like water and moving fast, and how do we get those from point A to point B quickly? But what they didn't consider are these externalities, like human beings that are trying to get from point A that have to walk across mm-hmm. intersections like Mount Hope and Elmwood. That's a secondary thing. It turns out that actually making our streets safer for bicyclists and walkers actually makes it safer also for the motorist. And if you look at what's happened in the United States, there are 2.5 million serious motor vehicle related injuries per year in the United States, 2.5 times 80 over an American lifetime, 80 years. That's 200 million Americans that have serious motor vehicle related trauma injuries. That's three times higher than a lot of Western European countries. So our streets aren't as safe as we think in terms of even being a motorist. And it really derives from what they've done is they've actually made these streets so you can go fast, but they haven't really made them so Lake Avenue is a great example. they can go fast, but it's not safe at all. And if you're a pedestrian, you're really taking your life in your own hands. And I, you know, talking to some firemen that I've treated over the years that worked out of the firehouse around there, that's like a death corridor, basically, especially for pedestrians. So the streets are not, there's this interchange. And so I think there's a lot of change in attitude in terms of we want the streets to become our streets, not the car's streets.
Okay. And I'm going to bring in Renee in a second, but let me just ask you, Sue, though, because the legislator is going to have to answer this question, too. I'm going to pin you down on this, see. Do you have colleagues who are opposing complete streets? Do you have colleagues who are obstreperous about this?
I have not had any conversations with colleagues who would oppose it, but I've not spoken to all 28 other legislators and asked them their opinion on it yet.
You know, Evan, let me make one.
That seems like a dodge. Do you suspect?
No, it's just true.
Do you suspect there is opposition?
I don't know. If you look at the data, and it's on the active transportation link on the county website, this is a problem in all communities. It's not just an urban-suburban problem. There's actually a lot more death and injury, if I recall the data correctly, out in rural communities. And so I think that everywhere people mm-hmm. want safe communities. I don't think anyone's in disagreement about that. I think the issue will always come down to what is the best solution for any particular location and what's the cost. And I do think, I'm not sure we have the best solution where we have the separation between sidewalks being under the town and village, even along county roads. I'm not sure how we solve that problem. Because you need multiple levels of government to agree to the same plan and strategy.
I should mention there's a public workshop coming up on March 22nd from 4 to 6 p.m. That's in the RTS boardroom on East Main Street, and they'd love to get feedback. I mean, that's still ongoing here. Obviously, legislator Sue Hugh Smith and Dr. McCray have their own views on this, but so do you probably in the community. They'd love to hear from you, and Renee Stetzer does. Renee's a board member for Reconnect Rochester who serves on the Monroe County Active Transportation Plan Advisory Committee. Welcome to the program, Renee. Thank you for making time.
Thank you for having me, Evan. Sorry I was having trouble connecting.
No problem at all. So just for fun, we're going to ask you what spot in this county drives you the most crazy that hasn't been
You all took my top two, which is Henrietta, not to pick on Henrietta. I know they are making strides to improve some of their roads as well, and Lake Avenue by far. So those are two of my hot spots.
And I only pick on Henrietta.
But
I just want to say, Renee, I only pick on Henrietta because I worked there for years, and the only time I ever got arrested in this town was in this community was for trying to walk there. I didn't actually get arrested.
Well,
I don't think they arrested.
It's hard to even drive through there. It's not easy for anybody.
Jefferson Road, West Henrietta Road, Jefferson Road, Ridge Road. There are places in our community that are really, really hard if you are not in a car, and they're hard if you're in a car. So.
Right.
But anyway, you see progress there. How much progress are you seeing overall here? And what do you want to see done here? When we talk in 3-6 months, what do you want to see finished that's not done now?
I think this is, I don't know how much you covered about the active transportation plan, but this is the first ever countywide active transportation plan. And I am very optimistic about that. I think that's a great step forward. We have lots of communities that have done active transportation plans, as Scott mentioned earlier. And this is an opportunity to think about how we want to connect our different communities, bridge those different active transportation plans, and articulate an overall vision for moving about more safely and conveniently within the county, no matter what your mode of transportation is. So this is an aspirational vision, and like much of these active transportation plans, it's a step forward. And once you establish a vision like this, you then every chance you have to redo a road when there's a resurfacing project, when you have a new development, whatever it is, you have an opportunity to put out some more complete streets and put out better options for people who are outside of vehicles and for those inside vehicles. So we have an opportunity going forward once we have a plan like this to kind of take a giant step forward. And, you know, we have a lot of things we need to fix from decades of prioritizing vehicles, of course, first. But, you know, this plan isn't about pushing cars out or saying you can't drive. This is about making it safe for everybody to get about our community and connect our communities, regardless of your age, ability, income, and your mode of transportation.
I'm going to grab a phone call from Noreen and Henrietta in just a second. But before I do that, Sue, as a legislator, what do you still want the community to know in terms of what kind of voice they still have here?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, folks can always access the input on the website at the Active Transportation Plan link, and they'll take written comments. You can reach out to all of your legislators, or I'm sure the county executive's office and the planning office would love to receive their feedback, or come to the legislature. And we meet tonight at 6 and share their thoughts, certainly. And, of course, the public workshop that's coming up on the 22nd. So,
well, let me grab Noreen and Henrietta on the phone. Hi, Noreen. Go ahead.
Hi. I try to ride to work along Lehigh Station Road and East Henrietta Road. It's very scary. And I ride on the sidewalk most of the time and take the side streets to avoid the main roads as much as I can. And they are proposing a change to Calkins Road. And I thought, oh, perfect. Well, maybe we could get bike lanes at least on Calkins Road. And so I responded to the comments. And they, just like you said, the county said, no, we don't do bike lanes. And the town would have to do it. And, of course, the town has got reasons why they don't want to do it. So it just kind of gets, you know, pushed from place to place. But I also wanted to, you may know about Niagara Street in Buffalo. It's the most beautiful street I think I've ever seen in my life now. They've got dedicated bike lanes with bollards, two-way traffic on the one side of the road so that it's just bikes. They've got rain gardens and they've got trees, and it's absolutely tremendous. And, oh, boy, I wish we could have that everywhere.
You're getting us dreaming of that, Noreen. That's Niagara Street, you said, right?
That's right.
Niagara Street in
Buffalo. Yeah, it was the sewer district, apparently, that did that project, but it's absolutely a model for every place.
Well, Noreen, thank you. And I want to emphasize a point. This has already come up, but let's hit this again, because this is going to confuse a lot of folks. Because Noreen is riding on very heavily congested traffic car traffic spots and doesn't feel safe enough to even avoid using the sidewalk, which I know we're supposed to not use the sidewalk if you're bicycling, but she doesn't feel safe. I don't blame Noreen at all. I've been there. I used to drive there all the time. But when she says, look, the town says call the county, and the county says call the town, that can be very frustrating. So again, Sue, what do you advise people when they're in that spot? And they go, hey, my town said call the county, and my county said call
bike
the town.
Bike lanes are under the purview of the county. So if it's a county road, they're the entity that has to put in bike lanes. Sidewalks belong to towns and villages. But bike lanes is the county. And, you know, the challenge is, if you want to implement a vision, right, at the end of the day, the community will look to County Executive Bello, not just for the leadership of the vision, but for the leadership of the implementation. And his staff is going to need to receive that directive ultimately from him. If the argument from DOT is it just costs too much, then somewhere in DOT's plans, they need to adjust their schedule. They won't be back to a section of road in this county for like a decade. If you don't fix it now, we're going to have to wait a really long time for a new vision. Well, that's just unacceptable. We've been waiting a long time. So we need to have them hear from their boss that they need to have a new schedule that adjusts, you know, for the time and cost of implementing bike lanes where they are most appropriate.
That means also budgeting for it, though, right?
Correct. Absolutely. I mean, it doesn't necessarily, I mean, if you only have so much money and you're not going to get more money, then you need to plan how much road work you're going to get done each year. Maybe you do a few less miles this year because you're going to do what you're doing the right way, the way that the community wants it done today.
Okay. These roads are around for 15 years at least, and so whatever design goes in there, it's going to be around for a long time. Like Lake Avenue went in, and it's going to be around for a long time. It's going to be very difficult to redo that road. So I'm from Portland, Oregon, and I've seen the transformation there. Every year they put in you know, a few bike lanes in, you know, over 15, 20 years, it's made a huge difference. But it cost a fraction of what it costs to do a lot of these other intersections and things like that for roads. So, and it pays off because young people want to migrate to those communities. Portland right. now saves $1.1 billion per year because they drive 4 miles less a day. The average American drives 24 miles. They drive 20 miles. That's $1.1 billion that stays in the local community. 70% of that's a regional multiplier. It stays in the community. It goes to the barbershops, the hair salons, the brew pubs. And so it's economically viable because it attracts young people and it keeps money in the community. It doesn't go to Exxon or Toyota.
Well, I really love that you brought up both those points. We're always complaining that our youth leave. And yeah, our youth are leaving because we need more jobs here, for sure. But we also aren't providing the type of lifestyle that younger people want. And walking and biking and having less car-centric communities are of interest to the younger generation. So I think we really need to give that some consideration. And the second point is that when people are biking and walking, they spend dollars at local stores more often.
There's actually data. It's kind of a counterintuitive thing, but people, because they're not going as fast, they tend to stop at places right. and spend money. And biking and walking people are spenders, basically, compared to somebody that's shooting through your town, basically going 40 or 50 miles an hour.
Renee, you've worked on these issues for years now. And when you hear a legislator saying, look, we need the person in charge of this county at the top to essentially push this directive onto the department to understand the priority, to set that sort of agenda from the top down, are you seeing that happening?
Am I seeing it happening right now?
Yeah.
I think the county serves an important role as a bridge to convene these different agencies and municipalities. So I think we are seeing a move in that direction. This administration, in their transition report, articulated that we've been sort of, you know, stuck in a car-centric model, and that the administration would like to see us move forward from that and reset where we're headed. And so I think I am seeing that. I already forgot your original question. Am I seeing?
I mean, I guess I'm
to be on the phone.
I mean, you and I have talked on this program for years now with your work in this. And I guess I guess I just want to know if you feel like at this moment, it's in a better place than it was in dealing with local government than it's been for a while.
I do. And I see that across the board. I mean, I serve on the board in the Village of Pittsford, and we just, had a huge project, resurfacing project with New York State DOT, and they were more collaborative than I've ever seen, and it was great. Pedestrian amenities, they sat down and discussed things with us. So I'm optimistic. I think we're moving in the right direction. The active transportation plan for the county is a huge part of that set the vision and change our culture a little bit, because we have been stuck in this, as Scott mentioned it before, we used to measure the success of a road by, you know, how much traffic can get through, as much traffic as fast as possible. And we are seeing that we need different measurements for success. We have we've talked a lot about keeping young people here. And what about the people who want to age in place? Almost every town, village, city comprehensive plan, lays out that we want to give people the opportunity to stay where they are. And in order to do that, driving can't be the thing we prioritize. So I'm optimistic about it, and I do see us moving in the right direction.
As I send it over to Scott, just one other point that to kind of build on what Renee and Sue have talked about here. This is not sort of theoretical, just new urbanists who are, kind of looking for this utopia of fewer cars. Kids and young adults are driving less than they have in a long time. People who turn 16 are pursuing a driver's license less than they have in a generation or two. And that's hard to understand for a lot of us who grew up at a time where it's like, the second you're 16, are you taking your driver's test? Right. But it is changing. This is not theoretical. And when we talk about what younger people actually want, this is part of it. So go ahead, Scott.
Yeah, one of the things about this is that we need connectivity. And when you, let's say the city goes and builds bike lanes and then it stops at the city line, that we need a continuous connectivity. And we need, rather than being on every street, we need certain streets that are sort of prioritized so that you have a network that's connected. And that, I think, is one of the ideas behind the active transportation plan.
Go ahead, Sue.
Yeah, I just want to jump in.
Yeah.
That, you know, I know County Executive Bello and his administration is pursuing these changes and these conversations internally. We've had some conversations about that, and I know that that is in process, and I'm looking forward to some particularly good news in the near future.
So, do you want to break any news right
no,
here, right now?
No, I don't. I don't.
But you feel
break
like it's coming.
News, but I'm feeling encouraged. I know that the administration, County Executive Bello, understands the challenge and the things that need to get addressed, and he's working with his staff very hard to get to the right place.
As we head for our only break of the hour, let me just mention again, public workshop number 2 is coming up on March 22nd, if you want to set your calendar there. March 22nd, next week, 4 to 6 p.m. on March 22nd in the RTS boardroom on East Main Street. They would like to see you there if you've got things to share for public workshop number 2 as we talk about the county's active transportation plan. And no surprise, I have a ton of email feedback. Listeners, if you want to call the program, it's 844-295-TALK, 844-295-8255. Your feedback for our guest, Sue Hughes-Smith from the county legislature, Dr. Scott McRae, an advisor for Reconnect Rochester, Renee Stetzer is a board member for Reconnect Rochester. We are right back on Connections. Coming up in our second hour, the city of Rochester says it has launched opportunities for local artists and community members to engage in public art initiatives. The Percent for the Arts program designates 1% of total development costs for the city's, essentially the infrastructure budget. 1% will go to public art, but who gets to decide where it goes and how will it be used? We'll talk to artists and city leaders next hour. This is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Don in Fairport says, Evan, I would like Monroe County to install 5 miles of protected bike lanes in 5 years. The New York State and Monroe County DOT engineers have defaulted to painting sharrows. Is that the term? Yeah. Sharrows as an acceptable alternative. Sharrows were originally intended to move cyclists into the driving lane to avoid dooring. Sharrows are actually creating less safe conditions. Secondly, e-bikes are the fastest growing sales category in the bicycle industry. They have many benefits to health, climate change, commuter times. E-bikes can be a change agent for transport planning, especially over a 25-year horizon. I would like Monroe County to factor in fewer cars and more e-bikes into this plan. That's from Don. Go ahead, Scott. You want to hit that first?
Yeah, the sharrows basically are great for bike boulevards.
Describe a sharrow, by the way.
Sharrow is where that bike picture that you see in the middle of the road
Yeah. Basically
indicates that bicyclists can be in this lane. But if it's on a busy street, let's say on Jefferson or something like that, it's worthless because no bicyclist is going to want to be on something like that. And unfortunately, sometimes they substitute a sharrow for actually putting a bike lane in a place that no bicyclist is really going to want to ride. And we see that in terms of the usage of those sharrows. And there's studies that basically show that when you put a sharrow in a busy street, it doesn't really help. They really need a bike lane or a protected bike lane. So, yeah.
How about e-bikes?
E-bikes, yeah. The other thing I wanted to say is that 50% of all bikes in Europe now are e-bikes. So those are really, really super practical. We see now e-bikes with fat tires. Someday you're going to start seeing people, even on days like this, they're going to be riding to work with a fat tire. If you had a nice protected bike lane, you could still ride to work, you know, just put the right clothes on, you could actually deal with this type of weather very easily.
Sue, 5 miles of protected bike lanes in 5 years, Don in Fairport once. What do you think?
Sounds like a great goal.
Yeah?
Sure.
Okay.
But I'm not in charge of DOT.
You like that idea.
Well, I love the idea.
And that's actually one of the ideas that we want to reinforce, is that we need to start creating criteria or goals, mm-hmm. and then hold the DOT accountable for those goals. because they could say, well, yeah, we have complete streets. We'll be nice to your bikes. But on the other hand, if we don't see actual paint, protected bike lanes, actual infrastructure that's really, really infrastructure, not a Shiro that is, let's say, on University Avenue, which, you know, you're not comfortable riding University Avenue, trying to share that, not the average person at least. And that's not going to encourage people to get out on their bikes. And the other part of this is that when you make it more bike friendly, more pedestrian friendly, it makes it safer for the cars. They slow down a little bit. They don't have to get there, you know, 2 minutes early. And so it's good for everyone.
Renee Stetzer from Reconnect Rochester, how do you feel about Don's email?
Well, that is a great thing to aspire to. I would like to see that. We know that protected infrastructure will get more people, as Dr. McCray just mentioned. It's going to get the regular everyday people out when you have protected infrastructure. So, I don't know if we're there yet, but we would like to see some lofty goals as part of this active transportation plan. And it's really, this is why it's really important for the county to hear from not just the stakeholders that have been involved in these early meetings, but from the public. And I know that a lot of people participated in the survey that went out last year. So they already have some good community input, but getting to that March 22nd public workshop and also submitting those comments online is really important so that they hear from as many people as possible.
We'll have links to the information that Renee's talking about, how to comment online, information on the public workshop. We'll attach it to this conversation when it posts later today at WXXINews.org/connections. Go ahead, Renee.
Are we going to, we've been focusing a lot on the bike infrastructure,
yeah,
which is one component of this, but active transportation is bigger than that, and you probably covered that at the beginning.
Well,
of
I mean,
the
I certainly mentioned at the outset. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, bikes get dominant. Bikes, if I'm just looking at my email today, guess what? It's pretty much all bikes. I'm looking at the phone board. We got, the phone is still ringing. It's mostly bikes. So I understand that that's where people's minds goes, and for good reason. We're a community that is a big-time work in progress with a long way to go on a bicycle culture and infrastructure. So I get that. But, Renee, is there something you want to add to make sure that we get the whole picture in mind?
Well, I was just going to remind anyone listening that active transportation is human-powered. So it is biking, it is walking, it's rolling, it's using mass transit and then combining it with those modes. So, you know, a lot of what this plan is yes, the looking at the bike infrastructure, but it's also looking at we've talked about how costly sometimes doing a road, redoing a road is, but simple things that once you keep in mind that there are other people, more vulnerable users, other people than drivers on the road, you can implement some pretty low cost things that make it safer. Right turn, you know, eliminating right turns on red in high density areas, leading pedestrian intervals, which are those little, if you've used a light at an intersection where it gives you kind of a few seconds to get ahead before the lights change. That's what those are. Those can make it a lot safer. Again, the sidewalks mentioned by Sue earlier, mass transit amenities, benches, shelters, making sure that snow is clear from, you know, corners. It's all sorts of things.
Absolutely.
And I want to make sure we articulate that that's part of this as well. So anyone who is concerned about mass transit and pedestrian infrastructure as well should comment and go to the meeting as well.
Let me get back to your feedback, and there's a lot. So I think we've got Jan and Irondequoit. Jan, go ahead.
Hi, thanks for a great show. I have two comments. One is that I think the idea of curb cuts so that people in a wheelchair or a stroller or sometimes a bike that's trying to bait off of the road to be able to get across a road without a huge curb is important. But another issue is that this conversation is great, but private businesses need to help as well. I am a relatively new resident to Irondequoit. I find it fairly comfortable to ride on many of the streets here. But if I'm riding my bike to go shopping, I need a safe and secure place to lock that bike. And that's dramatically missing in most places. So that's something else. I don't know how we address that, but businesses need to step up in partnership with this as well.
It's a great point, Jen. I see Sue, you're nodding over there. What do you think?
Well, no, it's a great point. I mean, it takes everybody getting involved and having proper infrastructure.
But that's a culture issue. I mean, I don't know that there's like a legal mechanism to force businesses. Maybe there is.
I don't know that there is. I don't know if there's locations near businesses that are, you know, town or village property or county property where one of those governments could, you know, take the action to locate bike.
It's really a funding issue. And like City of Rochester at one point had a whole bunch of bike parking stands available, and businesses could just request one, and they were able to give that. I don't know what if that's in their budget, but there is actually Justin Booth from Go Bike Buffalo talked about a program that they got together with some of the local microbrewers, and they created a bike. I forget the name of the bike beer, basically, but a certain amount of that money went to bike stations, basically, and they raised something like $30,000 or $40,000 through that beer system. Mm-hmm. So there, you know, there are models for private enterprise to get involved in this and really make it more bike friendly.
She made me think, like, there is a place where I park my bike at 12 Corners in Brighton. I'm like, who owns it? I don't know.
Actually, yeah. Renee, go ahead.
Yeah, well, I was going to say most of the active transportation plans that have happened in the individual communities, one of the recommendations has been to partner with businesses and encourage businesses to put bike racks, protected bike parking, maybe indoor parking, even encouraging larger employers to have facilities for showering and changing as well. So I know it's on the radar. How to implement that is probably a bigger ask, but you know, it's part of changing the culture around thinking how we get around. So I know that the active transportation plans in the communities have thought about that as well. And it was easy. As soon as I moved to the village, we asked the town, hey, can you put some bike racks out here and there? And I was amazed at how easy it was to get simple bike parking out. Hmm. So sometimes it's just about recognizing the need.
One thing that we've sort of forgot or haven't talked about is kids. And, you know, when I was a kid, we rode everywhere. It was like freeloading. If we wanted to get someplace, we'd hop on our bike and go. That, you know, because the cars are going faster and faster now, that's basically made it very, very difficult. But this is really a public health issue in the sense that, and I'm a physician, and I've gotten really tuned into this, the childhood obesity rate in Holland is 5 times lower than the United States. And the reason is because the kids all ride their bikes to school, basically. So it's a really important time for kids to get out and do some exercise. I know they're on their cell phones a lot, but if you build it, they will come. And if you make it safe, then these kids in Brighton or Rondequoit or wherever, they feel like they can get to where they want to go.
Yeah, we also probably need to not talk about it being parental abuse if your kid is out riding a bike and you're not exactly sure where they are at all times. It's, you know, it's okay. We're going to try to get every phone call. If you're on the phone, we're going to get all the calls in. We're going to squeeze them in. So hang there. Kathy in Fairport next. Go ahead, Kathy.
Yes, I just wanted to mention in Fairport, they're trying to get a designated bike lane on Lethbridge Lane, and they're getting the mayor, I guess, I don't know, some people think she tried to get it through without getting a lot of feedback from the residents of the village, but some of the businesses are fighting it, and a lot of older people that live in the village that feel like their parking's going to be taken away.
So people are fighting
a
bike lane
on
that bridge over the canal, you're saying?
Well, it'd be Lethbridge Lane.
Oh, Lethbridge Lane.
Is,
yeah.
Yes. Yes.
Yep. Okay.
Which is by the Soapbox Factory. I think that's what it's so called. But I think it would be a nice addition, but there's a lot of people that are against it because I think some of the businesses think it's going to take away from people going to their businesses due to parking being limited and that sort of thing.
Okay. Kathy, thank you. Renee, I mean, you having served on the board in Village of Pittsford, similar infrastructures, did you get some sort of NIMBYism about some of these issues there?
You know, this one is a tough one. I was afraid you were going to call on me. it is tough. You know, on-street parking in certain contexts actually calms traffic. So Each community kind of needs to decide for themselves. If you don't have enough room for on-street parking, if you remove it and put unprotected infrastructure and it's only, you know, it's just paint, sometimes drivers will be encouraged to drive faster. So it is a tough call. People are very concerned about parking, and as someone who can park and walk and doesn't mind to walk, I don't understand it. But it is it's a tough one in communities, and it's important to hear from everybody
enough.
In a transparent way and hear from businesses and try some things out. I'm a big fan of doing some tactical urbanism before you put, before you drastically change a road to see, let people get used to it and try it out for a while. So I can't comment on Fairport. I don't live there and haven't been part of those meetings.
I got you. It just sounds like what we need. It sounds like what we need are just more huge parking lots.
Yeah, don't get me started on the huge parking lots. We have plenty of parking, and I can't speak for the businesses in Fairport and don't want to even get into that.
I got you. That's really fair.
The community
totally
needs to decide for themselves, And it is a common conversation. You do have to weigh those two things.
Totally fair.
What's best for your community.
Yep, absolutely fair. I appreciate that. Thank you, Renee. So let me try to squeeze in two more here. Lynn in Irondequoit. Hi, Lynn. Go ahead.
Hi. I just want to make a point about trails. So I live in Irondequoit, and I'm not very comfortable riding my bike on St. Paul Boulevard or any street, unless it's a side street. But I've been over to the Auburn Trail, and I think that's a wonderful resource that we have in the county. You can ride through from the city to Brighton out to Pittsford. You could then catch on to the Erie Canal Trail. We do have a trail here in Irondequoit, and it connects the north part of Irondequoit, and you can even go right over to the O'Rourke Bridge and down to Charlotte and go north-south through the Seneca Park Trail, but it's a mess. It just hasn't been kept up for years and years, and there's mud holes, and if you tried to ride through there in the summertime with your kids, they'd probably be getting knocked off the bikes because of all the brush, the overgrown brush. So I'm wondering why the county maybe could take some time and effort on that. It's already there, but it just needs to be cleared out. It's a great north-south route to catch on to the El Camino Trail, which brings you right into the city. And then you're on St. Paul Boulevard or St. Paul Street in the city where there are bikes.
Yeah, let me just jump in here. Have you been there, Scott?
I've been on that trail, actually.
What do you think?
It's overgrown. I mean, it would be great. It does come down to money. But, you know, that's what – I mean, these can become highways. Like the Auburn Trail now, people for years didn't want that. And Bill Moley said that was one of the most difficult meetings that he had 20 years ago when they were trying to do that. And then they finally did it. Now people love it. They love walking down it, riding down it. The people that live around there, I think the land values have probably gone up, basically because it's a wonderful it's almost like a little park.
Well, sometimes people need to see it to sort of believe it. And Don writes to say, how about this? Focus lots of money and effort on making a total showpiece complete street somewhere. Once people see how great it is, they will want more of those in their own community. And I understand this would be over less area and maybe not in the best interest of equity for the moment. And that would kick the equity thing down the road. But I'm willing to take that risk to show people what one fully complete street can look like to make them all want it. What do you think, Sue?
Well, I mean, certainly an interesting approach. I mean, I think for those of us who have traveled or lived in places where there's great infrastructure for bikes and walking, like you have a different vision in your head. And I think that's very powerful.
Tool Design is doing the master plan both for the county and the city. They're a bike, pedestrian design and active transportation design firm. And they're, you know, they've outlined certain streets that are high priority that will get you from north, south, east, west better. And those, you know, we need to concentrate on those and have them be connected and continuous and not necessarily put a sharrow where there's a lot of traffic on that street. So it's a little bit of an uphill battle, but we can do it.
Boy, I got crushed with phone calls and emails, which is great. So if I didn't get you, just know that the public workshop number 2 is coming up on March 22nd next week. What is today, the 14th? So it's next Wednesday, the 22nd. 4 p.m. to 6 p.m. at the RTS Boardroom on East Main Street. They would love to see you there. You can submit comments online for the county's consideration of their active transportation plan. The city of Rochester has been working on their own issues with comprehensive access mobility. Look, there's a lot of different kind of threads here, but right now Monroe County is trying to pull it together and chart a new path forward, and they would love to hear from you next week or online. And I want to thank Renee Stetzer, who is on the Monroe County Active Transportation Plan Advisory Committee. Thanks for making time for the program today, Renee.
Thanks for having me.
Dr. Scott McCray, Advisor for Reconnect Rochester. Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
And our thanks to Sue Hugh-Smith, the Monroe County Legislator. Thanks for being here.
My pleasure.
More connections coming up in a moment.